Here is a special reminder for our on-demand and podcast listeners. KFUO will be celebrating our worldwide ministry with Share-a-thon 2016, a three-day live event Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd. Listen on our worldwide stream and on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis. Join us and enjoy all the live fun, plus hear from some of your favorite on-air friends. Again, Share-a-thon 2016 is April 21st through April 23rd. If you can't listen live during our 3 days of Share-a-thon, remember you can support us online anytime at KFUO.org. Just click a Give Now button on our website, or you can email us and ask us about other giving options. Email gifts at KFUO.org. It's KFUO supporters like you who make these worldwide online programs possible. Please prayerfully consider supporting KFUO today. And thank you for listening and supporting KFUO.
Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. If you have children in school at their various times throughout the year, this might be one of those times when they have to fill in all those forms, take those tests, whether it's on a paper form or on a computer, maybe students preparing for college, taking those standardized tests. What does all of this mean? Why is it important? How are these things, how are these standardized tests developed? Well, we're going to talk about that today here on Faith and Family. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me this morning in studio to tackle this topic of standardized testing, Laura Montgomery. She's the Director of Educational Resources for Lutheran Elementary School Association. Returning guest to Faith and Family. Laura, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you. It's always nice to have guests from Lutheran Elementary School Association and the expertise, the knowledge that you all bring to our conversations, especially when we're talking about our education and our children. I always appreciate the knowledge that you all bring to the conversation. Laura, tell us a little bit about your work with Lutheran Elementary School Association.
Sure. In my position, it is my responsibility to work with the schools on professional development. Mm-hmm. We offer professional development days for both administrators and for our educators in our Lutheran schools. And we also focus on curriculum development. Each year we update a section of our curriculum guides and bring together a team of Lutheran educators from our Lutheran schools in the area. And for example, this summer we'll be working on our science curriculum. And one of the great things about our curriculum guides is that we have that opportunity to integrate the faith within our standards.
I believe that was one of the topics of our conversation last time. We were talking about the changes in health curriculum.
Correct, right.
Last time, and the collaboration working with local school districts as well in working on that that curriculum. Well, LISA is really a collaboration, a cooperative of elementary schools, well, a number of schools, Lutheran schools here in the St. Louis area, in the St. Louis Midwest area.
Right. We currently have 31 elementary schools that are members of our mm-hmm. LISA organization. We go as far west as Washington, Missouri, so that would be Emmanuel Lutheran out there. Mm-hmm. Then we go farthest north, it probably is Zion and Bethalto. Far as east as Redbud, there's St. John's out there. And farther south, probably St. John's in Arnold, Missouri. And then a whole lot in the middle.
And I think we had an open house not too long ago. Many of the schools had open houses.
Right.
Good response to that?
Yes. It's always a great celebration of our Lutheran schools. We always try to hold that in conjunction with the celebration of National Lutheran Schools Week. And this is great opportunities for our schools to welcome the public into their mm-hmm. building and show people what is so great about our Lutheran schools.
Well, our family, my son goes to St. Mark's in Eureka. He's in the early childhood there. And we're very grateful for all the teachers and the staff that that make up St. Mark's Lutheran School there. They do a great job.
And yes, they do.
We know that, you know, for us, Lutheran education is important to us for our child. Even in those early years, that's important because we know that how he's being cared for while he's there and what he's learning while he's there. Most importantly, the love of Jesus is made known to him in throughout the entire day.
Exactly. You know, the last couple of days I spent at one of our elementary schools serving on an accreditation team. And Monday, we had the opportunity to sit down at lunch with 12 students from the school and ask them questions like, what do they like about their school, or what do they tell their friends and neighbors who don't attend that school about their school? And it's just so heartwarming to hear them answer with the Christian background that they're getting and say about the faith aspect and the fact that they can pray in school and they're not afraid to share that with their peers outside of the Lutheran system. And they're really getting the purpose why our Lutheran schools exist.
That's interesting that you ask your panel that question. Those are some of the same questions I ask during National Lutheran Schools Week here on Faith and Family.
Yes.
We have the privilege of at least five different Lutheran schools coming through the International Center here. And so students come in and I get to spend some time with them here on Faith and Family, ask some of those same questions. And you're right, spot on. They almost always say, that when talking with friends who don't go to that school, go to other schools, what they think about it. It always comes back to that they get to hear about Jesus. They get to learn about Jesus during the day in their school.
Right.
That to me makes it worth all the investment, all the time, all the resources that it takes to provide faithful Christian education here in St. Louis. And I know there are many Lutheran schools around the country, around the world, that work hard to do this.
Yes.
Well, part of education is assessment and evaluation.
Right.
Knowing where we are, knowing what we've accomplished, gathering information about what children have learned, what students have learned throughout the year, or throughout their education. Where are they now? And are we successful in what we've been teaching? Has it been communicated? Has it been received? Is the information the concepts, are they all being captured and retained by the students? How we go about that, how we get that information to know if they're learning, is challenging. And this topic of standardized testing comes up frequently. Now, our public schools are certainly required to do this for a number of reasons, to make sure that they're doing what they set out to do. Lutheran schools do standardized testing as well for a number of reasons. Not all of them, I would gather, but many of them do standardized testing. Is it a requirement for accreditation or anything like that?
Yes, it is for National Lutheran School accreditation, right? To that you are using an assessment tool, mm-hmm. and that you provide the data as part of your self-study, and then you also kind of take you assess your mm-hmm. how your school is doing with that data, and that's a big part of why schools use achievement testing. Is it kind of gives them a picture of it gives them a picture of how they are doing with their instruction, mm-hmm. and how they are doing with their curriculum.
How do we go about assessing this? You mentioned achievement tests. Are there other ways besides these tests that we...
Right. And that's a great question. And this topic is very timely because I'm sure right at this moment that there are probably hundreds of Lutheran school students at least that are taking their achievement tests. Mm-hmm. And so we, it's nearing the end of the year. And currently it's the popular time, kind of as you're wrapping things up, taking these summative assessments. However, this shouldn't be the only assessment that you're using to decide how a child is being successful or not in mm-hmm. school. And of course, there's lots of other assessment options. There's just the daily tests or quizzes. There's checklists that teachers can use, mm-hmm. observations. So one has to be careful to not put too much weight when they see their child's individual scores, that's only one small part of their abilities, and sometimes not a good picture of their abilities, mm-hmm. if they're just not having a good day. We always have to keep that in mind. And some of us have, days where we are at our best and sometimes not.
This is just a snapshot.
Correct.
You know, when we say standardized testing, it takes me back to those days of, you know, the number two pencil, filling in the little bubbles, reading the question,
yes.
Answering the question, trying to figure out the best answer to the question, and filling in the little bubbles. And by the end of the testing time, one having a crick in my neck and you know, a sore hand from trying to fill in all those little circles perfectly. You got to stay inside the circle so the
machine
right. can read
it. That's right, so the machine can score your test.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to, you know, miss out on a, you know, potential question just because there was a stray line outside of that,
right.
that dot. That's what I think of. Now, granted, I was in, you know, doing standardized testing and in grade school back in the 80s. You know,
right.
Has standardized testing changed much since then?
It is starting to change. And I can tell you just a little bit on the early history of standardized testing and the reason that these types of tests were developed, and it was during World War One. It was just to screen potential candidates for service and their skills.
Mm-hmm.
And post the war, then they continued to develop these tests because then they were wanting to decide, especially the Ivy League schools like Harvard, mm-hmm. Good candidates for their school. So that was how the beginning
sure.
of these scholastic aptitude tests were started. And then as, you know, the Industrial Revolution continued to take over in our country and we needed skilled workers, they
right.
continued to develop these tests. So my point in saying that is perhaps our paper and pencil method is somewhat antiquated and it is time to look at new options. And there certainly are online options and computer-based
yeah.
options for these standardized tests that we're talking about. And I think slowly in our Lutheran schools, we are starting to look at more of the electronic options
mm-hmm.
For our students to take.
Yeah, more and more of our schools are becoming equipped with the technology to do that with, you know, the one-for-one programs and things like that, students having access to computers or tablets and being able to offer testing mm-hmm. in that form. Certainly can be helpful and can save a lot of paper and a lot of headaches.
That's
trying to fill
too.
In those little dots.
That's true. Yeah, so there was a recent, just in the last few weeks, there was a survey sent out amongst our Lutheran principals nationwide, those that are on the Lutheran Education Association's leadership network. And 134 of our LCMS schools participated in this survey. And it was questions about the standardized testing. And out of those 134, 81 continued or still use the paper and pencil test.
Mm-hmm.
62 used the technology-based. And 10 said they used both. So the pendulum is starting to swing the other way. And most of our schools, then the paper and pencil test that many of them use is either the Stanford Achievement Test,
mm-hmm.
which is the... and one of the fill in the bubbles, just as the Iowa test. I think that
I
the
remember
one that you said that
Iowa
you took.
Basic,
yes.
Yeah, 1984.
Yes.
I remember taking that. I don't think we had to do it every year. Maybe it was even number grades or something like that. But attending public school, I remember taking that.
Yes,
it was a dreaded week. I'm sure
is,
the test was fine. Just as a student, it was dreaded.
Right. Well, it's not very engaging. It's it's a lot of seat time and concentration. But we recently learned that our Stanford Achievement Test will be going away, and in the St. Louis area, most of our schools use this Stanford Achievement Test, and then the ones that didn't mm-hmm. Were using Iowa. So we have been studying some of our options, and a couple of the other options we're looking at are more of the computer-based ones.
Mm-hmm.
And also they're changing and then are not necessarily just at the end of the year. They're not just a summative, but they call them a formative because you might take it two or three times during the year. And the idea is it is an assessment for learning, which means it should guide instruction. Many of these individualized, the electronic tests mm-hmm. can give you more individualized results in that it doesn't ask the same question to every student because it changes the questions based on your ability and where you're going.
Sure.
So it helps the teachers then plan for instruction and for that child and differentiating instruction. So again, it's the assessment for learning instead of the assessment of learning, which is the traditional way that we're doing now.
I would think with that advantage, that electronic advantage and the intuitiveness of the test itself, that, okay, if you get this one right and this one right, then we're going to go down this path instead of this path.
Correct.
And that can save time in testing as well.
Right.
So the assessment may not take as long.
Right.
Because I remember, it was hours at a time filling in those little bubbles, answering every question, hoping that you got it done in that timed, it seemed like hours. It was probably only 20 minutes at a time when I was a student, but it seemed like hours at a time. Now, from my experience in my former life working in higher education, the institution I worked for had an online assessment for placement testing, when it comes to English reading and English and math placement as well. And it did the same thing that you were just talking about, that those first few questions kind of assess where you are, and then that determines where the rest of the questions go.
Yeah, they call that adaptive assessment.
So that could, shorten the length of the assessment for the students. So if students didn't have to come in for a 4-hour assessment, they might be done in a half an hour. They might be done in 2 hours, depending on where it goes. And the online version was way better than the paper version.
I can imagine.
So that makes sense to me, that, if you're going to do this, if you're going to do testing, that you could do it throughout the year to get an idea of where we are, those measurements for each student throughout the year, to have a better idea to help with the teaching throughout the year, so that where you are and what you can be focusing on, where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are as students.
Right.
So do you do that first one right after summer break? Find out where everybody is and nobody...
I think they do give them a little bit of time to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
That is the recommendation. Maybe 8 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks in, and do that first assessment kind of maybe towards the end of the first quarter. Because we do lose a lot of learning, unfortunately, over the summer, which is the school calendar. That's another topic for another day.
Now, I know Lutheran schools, we have our own system, our own approach to testing, achievement testing. Our public school system, I think, is kind of in a similar boat. Their testing is changing has changed recently as well, if I understand, here in Missouri.
Right. And I can only speak really more for the state of Missouri. I'm more familiar with that. I don't know all the ins and outs of it. But definitely our public school counterparts, there is a lot more at stake with their results of their achievement tests. They call it the Missouri test. And part of it is because of the, I'm sure you've heard the No Child Left Behind Act. That was from 2001. And then in about 2008 or 2009, President Obama enacted the Race to the Top. And those two government initiatives really put a lot of pressure on our public schools to perform. They were looking at our test scores as a country compared to other countries and seeing that we were lagging behind. However...
Were we comparing apples to apples?
Not exactly. There's a lot more pressure, I think, on students from some of those countries that are very high performing. They spend a lot more time studying and memorizing than our students do. So it is not quite exactly the same audience perhaps that they're giving these tests to, but the outcome then has been more pressure on teachers, more pressure on students, and unfortunately we have not seen results like positive test results from the No Child Left Behind or the Race to the Top, which are both now changing. There's a new one called the Every Student Succeeds Act, which was just voted in earlier this year, and I'm waiting to see how that all rolls out and how that will affect testing in the future. And another topic tied to the assessment is the Common Core Standards.
Right.
Which were...
I was just reading about that.
Yes, adopted. And that's another hot topic.
Because it raises the question, are you teaching specifically for the test?
Exactly.
Rather than skills that would be needed for life and career?
Correct. Right. And I hear a lot of unrest from public school teachers who feel that pressure that they must teach to the test, and it kind of does take away their creativity. And there's a lot of life skills, yes, mm-hmm. that they may be missing out on if you're all the rote memorization of, mm-hmm. of history facts and solving mathematical equations. And it will be interesting in the next maybe 20 years to see how this mm-hmm. Assessment might change.
And then we have the added pressure of the concern that if a school, if the results of those tests are poor, then the school is labeled poor performing.
Right.
And may affect funding.
Correct. Yes. And that's for the public schools. Mm-hmm. That is a real challenge. And makes me appreciate our Lutheran school system. Not that we don't have accountability. We do have, our schools do really well. Is proven by, there's something called the Nation's Report Card. And, mm-hmm. We've scored tops in reading a few years ago on that study, which is another type of standardized test, ironically, but taken by mm-hmm. fourth graders and seventh graders in certain reading and math.
There's something to say about accountability and freedom and what role they have in the way that we go about education. There's micromanaging,
yes.
which really doesn't allow for a lot of creativity, a lot of freedom. But I think that our Lutheran schools have quite a bit more freedom. And what right. you see in the end are students who are more well-rounded and better equipped for right. A number of the things that they'll face in high school. I know just locally, many of our students who attend Lutheran elementary schools in St. Louis, when they go to the local, maybe they don't have a Lutheran high school in their area, or it doesn't work out for them to go to a Lutheran high school in the area. When they go to the local public high school, what I've seen, this is just anecdotally, but what I've seen is that those students are more prepared than the students coming from within the public school system already.
I would definitely agree. I've heard those stories too. And we are doing a very good job of preparing them well for their futures.
The students, just at St. Mark's alone, when they go right into the local high school there, they're well equipped for the most part. Many of them are well equipped for the classes that they're encountering in terms of math and English and as well as the sciences. They're well equipped, and that's just one Lutheran school. That's one
right.
example,
and that's
my own
hear.
Experience.
And the school district, the public school district, mm-hmm. Rockwood,
right.
that St.
Top
Mark's
rating
is
top rating in the state, I believe.
One of the top, yes, yeah, yeah, it's up there. So that's great to know, and that's thanks to the dedication of our Lutheran school teachers, mm-hmm. who I think they do a lot sometimes with very little.
Oh, sure.
And
but I think that sometimes pushes us to strive harder.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yes.
I think also that in the Lutheran school setting, the teacher knows quite a bit more about the student, and the student knows that relationship with the teacher is stronger too.
Right. You know, that is a very good point. A blessing of our schools is they are most of the time smaller than mm-hmm. your local public school, maybe not necessarily in your child's class size, but school size mm-hmm. alone. And you can get to know students, and you might know the name of every student in your school. And it is really a mm-hmm. family atmosphere. And
I think the big difference is, I think it is in the practice of home visits.
I love home visits.
Lutheran schools still practice, many of them,
right.
many of them still practice home visits. And what you can learn in a home visit as a teacher,
yes.
going to visit your students at home, can make a huge difference, which I don't remember this happening in public school. I remember my mm-hmm. own experience. The teachers never came to your home. There's this great divide between school and
right,
home
right.
in the school setting. And I remember as a child, I think it was maybe third grade or so, we had we had like an open house at the school where families go and visit the school in the evening and see. And that was kind of an unusual thing for, as a student. That was kind of a weird meeting of our two worlds colliding of home and school. But I remember as a child, my parents inviting one of the public school teachers to our home for dinner because she lived quite a ways away from school and didn't want her to have to drive all the way home, or, you know, there really weren't any places to go eat around our school there. And so they invited her over for dinner that evening. And I remember just thinking how strange that was as a child. It was fun, how unique and exciting it was to have my art teacher come over for dinner that evening before we went back for open house. And I remember thinking how unique and unusual that was, how exciting it was. And now with my son in a Lutheran school and having been involved with Lutheran schools, how many times students see their teachers and interact with their teachers outside the classroom, outside of the day, you know, the school day,
right?
Whether it's on Sunday morning
or at church,
right.
I'm a big proponent of home visits, and it is a great time. You both the parent and the teacher, I think, learn a lot. And so I taught kindergarten, and I've taught fourth grade, and home visits takes a lot of time. You know, at the beginning of the school, you're setting up your classroom, you're making your lesson plans. But I believe it's a really important time together. And this is that intimate sharing of, you know, you get to share things with the parents. The parents have that opportunity to say, hey, my child struggles at this or needs to be challenged here. Of course, you're always invited also for the bedroom tour. Come see my room. Which is just, it's just so sweet. It's neat. And it's a little, peek into their family life, how they operate. And that just, it's very helpful as a teacher. But going back to that family feel, though, and you're right, and you see them on Sunday morning, or you see your teachers going to Bible study, and it's a great modeling opportunity, too.
You see, in that home visit, you see how a family interacts, how they communicate, and that can sometimes explain how a child communicates or interacts in the classroom as well.
One of my favorite teacher friends and I our favorite saying was, the apple never falls far from the tree.
So true,
and it's like the more,
But that relationship that teachers have with their students, with the student's family, is so, now, I don't know how you measure that in standardized testing, but another example from a family member who works in, not in a Lutheran school setting, but had to make a home visit for, I think because of an IEP, needed to make a home visit to communicate with parents. And upon making that home visit, learned that the family had no furniture in their home. Oh. So there's no place for the student to sit and do his homework, things like that, other than sitting on the floor. Wow. Well, bringing that information back to the office, shared it in confidence. The staff was able to share it confidentially, you know, without revealing the family's name, saying that they have no furniture. Within 3 days, they had a whole house worth of furniture for the family and delivered it.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's pretty typical, though. I mean, like, that's incredible, but however... Right. Yeah. Those are the kinds of things that happen in our Lutheran schools. And you're right. These are the things that are hard to assess. And that's why we put, you know, when we look at these achievement test scores, it is one little sliver of the whole pie of the, you know, picture of how things are going.
But I bet those things show up in standardized testing, but not in ways that we could recognize. You can't say, oh, that's because of a relationship, or that's because of, you know, the love of Christ at work in this child's life. We need to take a quick break. Great conversation. When we come back from the break, we'll continue talking about standardized testing. We're talking with Laura Montgomery. She's the Director of Educational Resources at Lutheran Elementary School Association here in St. Louis. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
New York State is considered the abortion capital of the nation, but new data released by the New York State Vital Statistics shows a pretty dramatic decline in the number of abortions being done there. 2014 is the latest year this information is available, and it shows a decline of 21% during the seven-year period. This is big. And in New York City, ground zero for abortion, it showed a decrease of slightly higher. The area of the state that saw the highest drop of over 40% was upstate in Rochester, primarily in the black community. The efforts of Life Issues Institute and others are doing to reach the black community with the truth about abortion are working. Please pray for the ongoing efforts of pro-lifers in this area of the country.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Christian Friends of New Americans will be holding their annual walkathon at Concordia Seminary Saturday, May 14th, beginning at 9 a.m. The funds from this event will support CFNA's ministries to refugees and immigrants. Bring your family and friends. Help CFNA share the gospel through caring words and actions. For more information, 314-517-8513 or register at cfna-stl.org/walk.
Worldwide KFUO has been listener-supported since 1924, teaching the good news of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection for our sins, and witnessing to the world about God's mercy. We are on AM 850 in St. Louis and a click away 24 hours a day at kfuo.org. If you have questions about donating, you can email us, gifts@kfuo.org.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and the Chancellor of LCMSU, inviting you to join us right here on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. in the Student Union. If you can't make it, Student Union is always available as a podcast at kfuo.org. Learn more about LCMSU at lcmsu.org. And remember, college is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help.
The Student Union is underwritten by Lutheran High School Association.
This is Pastor John Vicker, Senior Assistant to President Harrison here in St. Louis. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts continues the fine tradition of proclaiming the gospel through Christian art. Through the production of altarpieces, paintings, and drawings, Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts portrays the gospel in all its splendor. Their website is agnusdeiarts.com. That's agnusdeiarts.com.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsors on this Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. Today's day sponsors are Randy and Joan Roth. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in celebration of their 31st wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Randy and Joan Roth of St. Mary, Missouri. Today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsors.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates, talking with Laura Montgomery, Director of Educational Resources for Lutheran Elementary School Association. Today we're discussing standardized testing and its place in Lutheran schools and place in education in general. What does this mean for students, for parents, as we look at, how do we assess what a child is learning? Before we went to break, we were talking about in Lutheran schools, the importance of that, well, in any education, the importance of relationship between school and home, between parents and teacher, and the relationship between the student and the teacher as well, and how significant that is, and how that makes a difference in a child's education as well. What are they learning, and why are they learning what they're learning? I think for a child, when you have that stronger relationship with your teacher, you're more likely to trust them and pay attention.
Yes.
in class. Do you think so?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. That relationship is very important. And if they can have that, like you said, trust, and there will be interest in the class. And likewise, too, those teachers that are trusted aren't probably the ones that are the sage on the stage, so to speak, but the ones that engage more with their students and might find out what their interests are and might steer their lessons around student interests, not just, well, this is in our textbook, so we have to cover it.
You know what would be interesting, and this is probably the making of a doctoral dissertation, but it would be interesting to assess the, in addition to the achievement testing on that same testing to gather information from students about their level of trust and respect. And I don't know how you get that from elementary school students, how much they trust or respect their teacher. That would be interesting to see
that
how that correlates with, with their achievement.
Study. That's a good point.
Yeah. Wow. Why don't you work on that?
Okay, sure.
So we go in Lutheran schools, as you mentioned, a part of accreditation is involves assessment. And so we do a lot of these achievement tests. The significant one that we've been using is going away.
Yes.
What are we looking for in the future? What are we looking for in achievement testing for the future for these Lutheran schools?
I think we really do would service our students best to be looking for a product, as I mentioned before, that really helps to drive the instruction and helps us see where students are individually. You know, if we look back, as I mentioned, like the history of why standardized tests were developed, there's a lot of bureaucratic uses for this data and the accountability pieces. And while those are important and they certainly have their place, we do need to hold teachers accountable for their instruction and for student achievement in the classes. But I don't want to be giving a test to a student just because of we need to show numbers to a certain audience. In my position at LISA, we have funders that help fund our programming and such. And, I wouldn't want to make a decision on an achievement test just because a funder wants to see this whole set of data. So that's one change with some of these more formative assessment types that aren't just the year end snapshot in there. But there's different ways that we can pull data from these formative assessments that could be shared. But that will be one of the challenges that we'll have to face moving forward with these changes. Also, I would imagine that the paper and pencil is going away. So as an organization, LISA, so we started, I heard back in September that the Stanford was going away. And
with a moment of panic?
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit. We knew we could take it still this year. And so we formed a task force to look into options. And
because that's what Lutherans do.
Right.
We form a task force.
Form a committee.
Especially educators. We form a task force.
And so we've looked at a few different products. We've heard back in March, I brought in two representatives, one for a product called Measures of Academic Progress, and it's from the Northwest Education Association. And they have been around for, I think, around 40 years. It's a research-based organization. And in fact, it was interesting that they're even a nonprofit company. So this sales presentation really kind of had a different feel on it because, as she made the point, I don't get any commission out of if your schools use this test or not. But that one is the one of the products that we're looking at that is the more formative type that they would take 2 to 3 times a year on the computer. Another change with that is that it mainly focuses on reading and math assessment, and there's an optional science assessment. And that particular day, the other test we looked at was the Iowa test of basic skills, which is more of the traditional type test, the paper pencil type test. Also been around for many years, as also research based and updated periodically. And but I feel that that would be more of a lateral move maybe for our schools. We are going to look at another product coming up next week called the ACT Aspire. A couple of our high schools changed to this test a couple years ago, looking at their incoming freshmen. Mm-hmm. So again, this one is an online test that is designed to be given a few times a year, or it does have a summative component to it as well. So I am predicting, I don't want to skew things because we haven't made our final decision.
Sure.
And it is not my decision since we are a consortium of the 31 schools, but I am predicting that we'll probably go away from a paper and pencil based type test. And it's going to make some people happy and it's going to make some people unhappy because we are Lutheran again, and that would be change. And change is scary, right?
There are certainly, I think there are many advantages to going to an electronic format. Yes. As a parent, I would think that results would be available sooner.
Right.
I remember as a child the pain of sitting there filling in those little dots.
Right. And the turnaround time on these electronic tests is nearly real time, or
wow,
within 24 hours.
Wow.
And then they can give you a report of, you know, where the student is.
Mm-hmm.
Typically the reports that we get back right now, and I can talk a little bit about how the current standardized test reports come back, and the scores that parents will want to look at are percentiles and stainines. And the tests are designed to produce your typical bell curve, where you have a few students that are very low, most of the students in the middle at the top of the curve, and then a few students on the very high end. So they'll throw a few questions in there that are very easy, and then on the other end of the spectrum, perhaps some vocabulary words that most of us don't ever use in our day-to-day language that they'll throw in there to, for maybe those mm-hmm. that do have high vocabulary skills. And so the 50th percentile would then be the average score. So it's different than percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So at 50%, that
sure.
would be failing. So it's a different way of showing the score distribution.
So that the percentile basically indicates if you're at, 51, or 52 percentile, then that means that 51% of the other students scored below.
Correct.
Where you were.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And this, thanks for explaining this, that students or that parents may have some of this, may receive some of this information as well. I remember during some of the standardized testing, never getting any of the results as a student. Parents nor the student got any of the results, that this was strictly used for the school. Now, that was in a public school setting. How do we typically use the results, and who receives that information from standardized testing that we've been doing, or from achievement tests that we've done so far, and how will that change, you think, in the future?
Typically, right now, there are parent reports that is a little more scaled down than what the school reports look like. I hope the schools are sharing those results with parents, mm-hmm. With some explanation too, because it is somewhat of a foreign language, these percentiles and stainine scores. And there's also usually a grade equivalent on there, which, for example, if at the end of second grade in reading, your child has a grade equivalent of a 4.0, meaning the beginning of fourth grade year, does not mean that they're ready to advanced to fourth grade at the end of second grade, just saying that they read as well as a fourth grader entering fourth grade the first month of school. The school reports are more detailed. They will break down, for example, the reading to word comprehension, vocabulary, decoding skills.
Mm-hmm.
And a school can use those results to review their instruction, to see how, if you look at the big picture by class, the third graders didn't do so well in spelling this year. Maybe we need to look back at how we are instructing our students in spelling, and maybe the fourth grade's doing really well at that. Fourth grade teacher, what are you doing for spelling? And learn from that way and grow.
So you can see gaps. If there are major gaps in a particular group, you can see that through this data, through the results,
right. And
then address it.
Right.
For the following year.
Right. One neat strategy that I learned a few years ago and used with my staff in reviewing achievement test scores was to color code them using highlighters, green, for, these things are strong and good.
Oh, Laura's got out the highlighters.
Using orange for, things like, these maybe need to look at, and yellow for, these are things that are really low that need our attention. And it's a good visual, and it's a good activity to go through with the faculty, not just the principal, and then send it over and say, hey, these are all the things that we need to work on. But it can be very eye-opening. Teachers can get, they have ownership. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of ownership and pride in what
sure.
they do.
Did you find people stealing your orange and yellow highlighters throughout the year?
No, I had them locked safely, so we had them ready when we needed them. But it's hard sometimes for them to hear and see maybe that their students didn't do as well as they had hoped. But the teachers are there to help the
sure.
students grow and learn. And so that's the point, and just takes a whole team to look at those things.
As a parent looking over these results, questions that you might have, what are some typical questions or responses that parents might have when they, or maybe misconceptions they might have? You mentioned one earlier when, if it's as a four, your
right.
child's in second grade and you see a four for reading, that doesn't mean that they should skip a grade and go right into fourth grade.
Right. Yeah. And I always, when I would share achievement test results with parents, accompany it with a letter of explanation and remind them, this is one piece of your child's picture of how they are learning. And just to not put too much weight into it. From year to year, you can see trends with students on their scores. And as I mentioned before, maybe they just had a really bad day. And if things dip down really low, well, let's look at their report cards. Let's look at their daily grades. A lot of schools use portfolio assessments where they'll have a collection of the students' work. So pull all those things together and talk with the teacher. And if there are concerns, what can be done about them? Is this something that I really need to be concerned about? Or if, is this, just kind of a fluke kind of thing.
Well, and I would imagine with the possibility of now testing electronically and multiple times throughout the school year, that can give you a better picture of, was that just a bad day?
Right,
or,
an indicator of future success. And then I would imagine there are ways to probably even send those results probably electronically right to parents as well. And, communication is key and all these things. And, I find too in our Lutheran schools that we really just have terrific parents, and they are very involved in their child's academic life and have concern as they should, because most of them are paying tuition,
sure.
To send their child to the school. But they have that vested interest and concern for their kids, which is, I think, too, part of our school's academic successes.
Oh, yeah. I think that comes back to what we were talking about earlier. That relationship between home and school is so key and so significant. And I agree, especially in a Lutheran school setting, families, whole families are invested in education because somebody's making a sacrifice.
Right.
Several people are making a sacrifice in order to provide such quality education. Educators quite often are making that sacrifice, in terms of they put in a lot more time than what they're usually paid for, but a lot of time, a lot of energy and resources into that. But families as well that whether they're paying tuition or someone else is helping them with paying that tuition, whether it's through scholarships and things like that, or other family members helping that they're making sacrifices as well. And a lot of Lutheran schools, and I know public schools as well, encourage parents to volunteer to be a part of the classroom
right.
experience at least once during the year, if
right.
not more.
Right, and that can be very eye-opening for them, and it's good for them to really see what's going on in their child's classroom and be a part of that school day, and that's a great thing.
In terms of achievement testing, Is there a specific grade level or age at which we begin testing, and how does that look different from, you know, the upper grades, you know, those early years? I can't imagine doing any achievement testing in my son's preschool or early childhood class.
Right. Yeah, they're a little squirmy for filling in the bubbles. That's actually a great question, too. And we are kind of all over the map as far as our LISA schools, where we start testing. Some will start it as early as kindergarten.
Wow.
And yeah. Some decide to wait till third grade to give the standardized test. And I can see pros and cons of both. And even at the third grade, sometimes there's a little concern for they're just getting to be really good readers. And
right.
So there's also that whole then discussion of the validity of a test. If a child is in reading in particular, has issues with reading, that can blow the whole, even the math portion, because they have reading comprehension issues.
That was the same issue in higher ed as well. You know, we had students that would come to take the placement test. Well, if they scored poorly on the reading test, can you expect them to do well? They might, you know, have the skills, some of the skills in math that they need, but because of the format if of the test.
Yeah, if it's a contextual type math question with the story question, if you will. That can make it challenging.
And so, absolutely.
On a related note, we do have a great support in our schools with special education, either through our Lutheran Association for Special Education teachers that work with students, or schools that have their own special education teacher, and identify those kids who have learning disabilities, and then they have accommodations. Either they can have the test read to them, or they have extended time to take the test. So it's another way to meet learners' needs. And again, I'm a proponent of this. Really, assessment needs to be student-centered. And sometimes, like I said, the state test, maybe not. And we talked about the Common Core just a little bit. And I really do feel for these public school teachers. I think this year will be it's the third or fourth different standardized test they will take this spring because of the challenges that Common Core is presenting. And even in our state of Missouri, we voted in the Common Core, and now we are trying to undo Common Core. And I just wanted to add, too, that our Lutheran schools are kind of so we are not mandated to adopt the Common Core in our schools as private schools. But some schools have embraced them, and some schools have gone 180 degrees from them to say, we are not Common Core. So that's really an interesting dichotomy, too. Mm-hmm.
The things, it seems to me that, the minimal things that Common Core may require, Lutheran schools exceed by far. The things that Common Core requires. The interesting thing is, I think values play different, make a difference in this. What is Common Core expecting and why?
Right.
Versus why do we teach what we teach in Lutheran schools? Mm-hmm. And how is that going to serve this child as a citizen, as an adult, as a child of God, as a contributor to society?
Right.
How is that, how are these things going to, and when it comes down to our worldview as Lutherans, I think that significantly different probably than what's gone into whether it's Common Core or other approaches to education that come from a different worldview.
Right. And there's so much in the public schools, so much focus on being politically correct, and you have to be so neutralized on so many things. Our opportunity, as you said, to have our values put in place is a big difference, I think.
Sure. When we try to, as you said, neutralize so many things to make things politically correct and neutralize things, there are certainly some important and good things that are lost along the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Word of God.
How about that? Yes. Those are for starters.
Exactly. Well, I have appreciated what you've shared with me, certainly as a parent, but also I'm sure our listeners appreciate as well what you've shared about standardized testing or achievement testing and what role that plays in education. It's put me at ease, I think, about what lies ahead as well. I can see how what you've shared about, electronic approach to assessment and that happening a couple of times throughout the year is formative assessment, I think, is that the
correct
term
yes.
you use? That can shape... that helps us understand where our children are and what might be needed throughout the year, how instruction can be adjusted throughout the year right. to accommodate that as well. Very helpful information. Laura, I really appreciate it. If folks want to learn more about Lutheran Elementary School Association, find a Lutheran school in the area,
yes.
Where can we find out more about Lutheran Elementary School Association?
Through our website at lesastl.org. So that's lesastl.org.
All kinds of bright, smiling pictures on the front of the website as well. Love all the pictures of the kids on the LESA website. And that's great. Well, Laura, thanks so much for being my guest today. Laura Montgomery, Director of Educational Resources, Lutheran Elementary School Association. Always great to talk with you.
Andy, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, studying God's Word with Pastor Whedon here on Worldwide KFUO. Tomorrow, we begin Share-a-thon 2016. Hope you can join us. We'll start bright and early, 7 a.m. Share-a-thon, lots of different guests. Learn about becoming a partner with Worldwide KFUO. Become a day sponsor all day long, 7 a.m. till, I think we're going till 6 p.m. tomorrow, 5 or 6 p.m. Stick around, numerous guests and hosts.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.